Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the 10 Laws Podcast with East Forest. I am Señor Forest. This week I have a conversation with Mike Danheim. I hope that's how you pronounce your last name, Mike. Because you know what? We never said it together. You were just Mike. And he has been working on an app called Sensi that's all about muscle testing. So really in my mind, you were Mike Sensi. And I just realized before recording this podcast, I was like, I should probably figure out what Mike, your last name is. And it's Danheim. So Danheim. Either way, it's Mike with Sensi. And muscle testing is a pretty interesting subject. So I just wanted to learn more. And he's someone that I met on my travels. And I thought it was just super, super interesting. So we will get right into that. But it's a couple days away, folks. The Ram Dass album is about to be released, depending on when you're listening to this. But for me, it comes out August 9th. That's a few days. It's a really big moment in time for me, because this has been a long time coming. I know we've been releasing it in chapters, but this really feels like, because we're finally releasing it as one complete album, and that's what chapter 4 is, it feels like the journey really starts now. And we're just now, finally, I'm able to present it how I always was envisioning that it would be, as one listening experience from start to finish. It's a little over an hour, and I wanted it to take you on a journey and cultivate different feelings in you from different types of music and songs. So I can't wait to hear what you think of it as one complete piece. Are you going to host a listening gathering? Are you going to be one of those folks? You know, you can do it by yourself, hosting a gathering by yourself. I'm serious. Like, we're all going to be listening to the record on August 9th all around the world. And you can join us in the energy of listening to it in that collective fashion. But you can also invite some friends over. You could do it with your friends or with the public. Do whatever you want. It's a way to connect with the others and use this moment in time and this record as a vehicle for connecting into these themes and ideas that Ram Dass wants to put out there and meet new people. So that's August 9th. We encourage you to host a listening gathering. If you want more info and materials, hit us up. info@eastforest.org. That's the same email if you wanted to say hey, or if you have questions or that kind of stuff, please do it. Thank you so much for those of you who have reviewed the podcast. If you'd like to do that, please do. It really helps, makes a big difference. Just give it 5 stars, scroll down, write a little review, hit that little thing that says write a review. We had a cool review, recently from Ayurvedic Autoharp. That sounds like a really interesting instrument, an Ayurvedic Autoharp. But she says, or he, excuse me, how dare I? She says, perfect. Thanks so much for this tender and touching account of the context of the recordings. You and Radha have entered my life at an auspicious time. I'm assuming that is referring to the episode that was the story of recording Ram Dass, perhaps. But thank you very much, Ayurvedic Autoharp. I appreciate the comments and I love hearing from folks out there. Obviously, face-to-face is great, but it's great to receive messages, too. I just got back from Vermont. I did a little private event out there that was outdoors. That was pretty sweet. And I'll be back in Vermont in mid-September in Burlington playing. But all that's over at eastforest.org, where that's all the other live dates and stuff. We still have a couple spots left for the East Forest Retreat in southern Utah. And I know that if you've been looking at it, maybe you're like, oh, I want some of the private housing. You know, I want my own bathroom. Believe me, I get it. I know how that goes. But let me just throw this out there. There's camping available, obviously, okay? And there's some bunk rooms. But all of those have these wonderful bathrooms that are private. There's just several of them upstairs, if that makes sense. So it's kind of a pretty sweet deal. And we do have a few off-campus spots, places to stay, other properties just nearby that those just opened up. So you could email us if you go to eastforest.org again, hit the retreat tab, reach out, and we can give you more info on what those are and the pricing and see if that's a good match for you. Because I would like you to come if you're feeling the draw. It's a special event. It's coming up end of September, September 26th through 27th. That's one of my favorite times of the year in Southern Utah, down in Boulder, Utah, in the Grand Staircase National Monument. So we get the fall colors, hopefully, usually. That's the peak of them on the mountain. And then we have, of course, the canyons. It's a great time of year to be in the canyons because it's nice weather, but not too hot, not too cold. It's usually really great hiking weather. So join us. It's a time for wilderness and meditation and yoga and, of course, lots of music and socializing and partying and dancing and relaxing and connecting and dreaming and stargazing and saunas. What more could you want, folks? Sounds like a good combination to me. Okay, so this weekend when Ram Dass comes out, it's going to be, I'm on the podcast over at Raghu Marcus's podcast on the Ram Dass Network. It's called Mind Rolling, and that we'll talk about the record over there. We're going to be doing a live event in San Francisco at Envelop, which is a 32-speaker system that surrounds you, and it does spatial remixes of the record. I'll be playing there live along with Christopher Willits, who's doing a remix for the record. And there's other things going on this weekend too. I mean, we've got like videos coming out. We're going to do a live stream through Ram Dass's Instagram on Friday of part of the live performance, and we're going to do a Q&A, is the plan at least. So maybe you'd like to join in and type in a question and check that out. It should be around 9 p.m. Pacific time on Friday on Ram Dass's Instagram. And we're going to try and film it on another system and maybe put that up on Facebook, blah, blah, blah. You know how these things go. It's hard being a digital player, folks. It's hard to navigate these waters, but it's fun. I'm just excited that the meat of the experience, the foundation of all of this, the record itself, is coming out. And it's my 20th release as East Forest. And every time I do it, it's just, they're like milestones. You know, you look back on your catalog and your life, and there's these milestones where you essentially put out records, and they're like signposts in your career and your life. And this is one of those. So I'll stop blathering about all that. Okay, so let's get into this conversation with Mike, Mr. Sensi. Enjoy.
The universe is a manifestation of the One. And the oneness is inside the soul.
Thanks for joining me from the islands of Key West. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we met at, it was Awakened Futures, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Although I feel like I met you the first time I listened to your music, but that's another story, I guess.
That, yeah. But as far as when the two of us met, Awakened Futures, and you were there presenting, you were there because of the Sensi app, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We led a couple breakout groups during the conference.
Cool. And you have, and eventually we'll get into that app a bit because it has to do with muscle testing. And muscle testing is something that I've been interested in. I kind of got introduced to it because I have a friend of mine that listeners of the podcast may know about, VCJ, Court Johnson. He's the guy who's the voice of the 10 laws and kind of a mystic up in the hills of Santa Barbara. And he uses muscle testing with his kind of fingers and his thumb. Mm. And he kind of does it. He does these readings with people all the time, these long readings, like many hours. And I noticed that he's doing it on his hands, like continuously, as a way of checking in, I guess, with some sort of validity about what he's feeling or thinking or seeing internally. And that just always sparked my interest about muscle testing in general. And so I thought it'd be cool just to kind of, as a starting point, get into, like, you know, what that is, some of the basics about it, and then a little bit about what you're up to. And then I'm sure that'll spur some conversation.
Totally. Sounds awesome. Yeah, I mean, what you just hit on is, I think, a really interesting place to start the conversation, which is there's so many different ways that muscle testing is used and can be used, and so many different understandings for it, which was sort of the curiosity that drove our exploration of like, well, how, you know, what does this respond to and what doesn't it respond to? And what are the limitations and what is it even responding to, you know, is still a big question that's driving our exploration.
Why don't we go back and can you just tell us like what it is and where it came from as a methodology?
Yeah. So muscle testing itself, not Sensei, right?
Yes. We have to start at the beginning here.
Yeah. Well, so Chinese medicine for thousands of years has always said that the body has wisdom, right? And so if you look to like the acupuncture communities or the chiropractic communities, they'll tend to consult the body to tailor their diagnosis and better understand what's occurring or what's at the root of the symptom, right? So many times when something, there's like pain in the body or there's something going on, that might not be the actual problem. That might be sort of like the victim screaming. And what these sort of Asian or Eastern methodologies do is they consult the body. So they'll ask questions and they'll do these forms of muscle testing to identify where the actual stressor is that's creating the pain so they can be more precise with their remedy. So Chinese medicine, you know, I'm not sure the exact point that it was born in Chinese medicine, but it was thousands of years ago. Mm-hmm. But it showed up in the West in the early 1900s at Harvard, actually. By this guy, Dr. Jeffrey Martin, totally different than the Dr. Jeffrey Martin at the Trans.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, totally.
Gave everybody a book.
Yeah, exactly. That guy. Yeah. Yeah. We actually did research with that guy. I thought it was so funny. I'm like, wow, we're doing research with Dr. Jeffrey Martin, but it's not the same one. What are the chances? Funny serendipity. But there was a Dr. Jeffrey Martin at Harvard in the early 1900s who was doing studies on infantile paralysis. So identifying the actual muscular group that was causing or affecting the paralysis of another muscle group. And so he started using muscle testing as a way to identify and help solve for that. He's got some papers. I actually have links to his papers on our website so you can see the papers that he wrote about it. But that was really interesting, right? And then from there...
Was that accepted at the time, or was that seem heretical, or was it sort of, they're like, yeah, this is just another form of medical study?
Right. I'm glad you asked that, because I feel like that is part of the problem that muscle testing faced was longer term. So in the near term, what Dr. Jeffrey Martin was doing was accepted because it made sense. Like, I think that the Western medical community could wrap their head around it, where it was like, oh, okay, so there's a muscle group that's deficient or it's not responding, so we're testing by pressing. And I think that that was logical enough that people accepted it. It didn't involve anything to do with like, you know, spirit or consciousness or energy. It was about muscular, you know, abnormalities. And so it seemed to be accepted and it was used. Shortly thereafter, I'm going to just kind of skip over a couple other people, but get to the part where it starts to get interesting. You see Dr. Goodhart and Dr. Diamond, they start using it in chiropractic medicine. And Dr. Goodhart, by the way, I love that their last names are Dr. Goodhart and Dr. Diamond. I think that's really, I feel like the universe is trying to tell us something, you know? So Dr. Goodhart and Dr. Diamond using it in the chiropractic community, and Dr. Goodhart actually uses it for the U.S. Olympic team. And Dr. Goodhart is really the first place that you start to see a medical doctor also start to use it for psychological purposes. So he starts using it to identify sort of the psychological root of different problems, you know, that aren't as definable or as easily to get your hands around. And he was doing amazing work. You know, I mean, he was doing work for the U.S. Olympic team. But it was around that time that then Dr. Hawkins, you're familiar with Power versus Force and that stuff?
Well, that book, yeah, is something that Radha was really into a few months ago. She was reading that. And tell us more.
Yeah, just to differentiate, David Hawkins, not Stephen Hawkins. So well, that'd be pretty cool if Stephen Hawkins was
muscle testing Stephen Hawkins. Now that would be a whole nother conversation.
Totally.
How that would even work. Yeah.
Yeah. His eyelids. Oh, right. Yeah. I didn't think about that part. Right.
Yeah.
I was also just thinking about like exploring the cosmos with with muscle testing. But
oh my god,
yeah.
All right, let's stay on track. So
yeah, yeah, that is the problem with
getting deep. This is getting deep, man.
Yeah, the topic can really get blown apart pretty quickly. But yeah, so at the same time that you have Goodhart and Diamond doing some pretty intensive work, Dr. Hawkins shows up on the scene, and he also starts doing some pretty super interesting work. But he starts making some really, you know, what the medical community thought was to be really crazy claims. You know, he starts, I can talk about that if it's of interest, but you know, he makes a map of human consciousness through muscle testing, and he starts calibrating different figures, historical figures, people like Jesus and Gandhi and all the way down to Hitler. He starts calibrating them, their energetic levels and their emotional levels using muscle testing. And like,
how does he do that?
He does it on
I don't understand.
A metric system. So it's like, I believe Hitler was like a zero, and then Jesus calibrated at, I'm ballparking, it's been a while since I remember reviewing his work, but it was like 100 or 1,000. I forgot what the metric was, but it's like this range of numbers, and zero being the lowest, and then he would test to see where they are, at what level. So he'd ask a specific question to help identify where they are on the spectrum of human consciousness. So just for context, right? I wear many hats, and so my like spiritual woo-woo hat, like the open-hearted hat, I'm like, that's super interesting. Like that's super interesting. I don't know how you validate that scientifically, mm-hmm. but if right. there is a way to create a map of human consciousness, and like to me, a map implies that you can help navigate people, right? Like it doesn't imply of like defining and putting people in like a prison or whatever. It says like, oh, if you can identify where you are, you can get to a different place. So that's super interesting if you can do that. I just don't know how scientifically to validate that. And hopefully longer term, maybe we can do something, you know, with our technology to help validate it. Who wouldn't want to know where they are and the levels of consciousness, right? So that's Hawkins. And I think at that time, what happens, you know, is that he starts making some pretty amazing claims around consciousness and muscle testing. And at the same time, you have quantum physics really starting to blow up too. And so he starts incorporating some of the quantum physics into muscle testing and using that as a way to explain how muscle testing is interacting with this field of consciousness that's all around us. You know, and all of it sounds pretty interesting, right? And very plausible. But I think the scientific community had a hard time getting their head around it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, would you say though, on one level, it's kind of like, your body has through your muscles as part of your body, it has a communication or a response to sort of, stimuli, which could be a question or a situation. And we can read that through this form of muscle testing as a way of trying to like read the subtler communication from our bodies coming from our brains, so to speak. Does that seem kind of accurate if we're trying to just sum up, like, I understand there's all these different like offshoots we could go in on how we could use it or what it's actually communicating with, but it's actually like reading tension in a sense from our muscles.
Yeah. So we've done, you know, what we just talked about aside, everything you just hit on, yes, it's true. And we've done a lot of heavy digging the last couple of years to better understand what we're measuring. And what you just said is more or less right on it. And we have good neurophysiology to really explain how the brain is interacting with muscle fiber. And there's already mm-hmm. some really good existing research out there that shows, you know, strong evidence for what we're measuring, which is how we've gotten some of the clinical relationships that we now have. And what's really funny about what you just said is that if you actually go to the Sensi website, I didn't put David Hawkins on our website because I really wanted to, not because I have anything against him. I think his stuff is fascinating. He has several books that have been profoundly impactful in my life, but because really what I want to do with the technology is to help bring this, usher this in to sort of the Western mindset as a tool that can help us, right? Because stress is like one of the biggest problems that we face at the moment. So if we can have a tool that can help us identify sources of stress, we can heal them, right? And so long story short, I didn't put David R. Hawkins on our website because I was afraid that it might create more harm than good. But the funny thing about this is, coming back to what you were just talking about, is that the more we've come to understand the technology, the more plausible some of the claims that Hawkins made might make sense. And sort of how there's a loop of energy between the cerebellum and muscle fiber called, it's called the gamma loop, which is really well documented. And so when you're having thoughts, you know, very stressful thoughts, this energy goes down. It's at the gamma neuron down to something called the Golgi tendons, which create muscular tension. So there's literally a recoil mechanism from these tendons that attach your muscle fiber to your skeletal wall that actually create tension in your muscle fiber, which then sends an alpha neuron back up to the brain, telling the body, as biofeedback, telling the brain, hey, stress. So your body and your feelings are sort of this, like, you know, this, basically you're born with the most sophisticated computer you ever own. It's like this biofeedback system. Your feelings are trying to guide you to what's in your best interest, you know, and,
right.
And muscle testing is at the heart of that.
So traditionally, muscle testing is being done by yourself or someone else feeling resistance. Is that correct?
Yeah. Should we just explain it really quickly? So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So if everyone listening, if you just imagine that, you know, you stick your arm out straight and your arm's extended, and then a doctor's facing you and they put their hand on, say, your wrist, and they, you have to press up just a little bit, like a light resistance. And then the doctor, or whoever's administering it will press down on the wrist and watch your, the recoil in your deltoid muscle. And if the recoil goes soft, there's stress present. If there's no recoil, there's no stress. And so the nervous system is responding to what we think and say and feel or are exposed to.
So it sounds like one challenge of this would be you get in your head about it. And you're like, well, how do I just let sort of my natural muscle response, as opposed to, because you could obviously control your arm and control the resistance if you wanted to. We can move our arm around. And so how do people, you know, get out of the way, in essence, of themselves?
Yeah. It's a really good question, and we're exploring that right now in our next design function, because feature for Sensi, because one of the things that we've noticed is exactly what you just articulated, is that you have to be in a sort of an open state. So if you're, you know, in a state of defensiveness or skepticism, and you're not open to trying, I mean, then you're going to prove yourself right. You know, and that's a really big conversation right there that we could have, you know, how we do that. We prove ourselves right, you know? And so, so you do have to be open. So you have to be sort of surrendered and open and vulnerable to use the technology, and be wanting, you know, curious and wanting to see what's going on, you know?
So you guys are using, the idea was the accelerometer in the iPhone. So when the muscle testing happens by them shaking it three times, and by doing that, it's measuring very small differences in the resistance of that shake to be the doctor. The iPhone is telling you that is a yes from your body or that is a no from your body. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Precisely. Yeah. When we built it, we asked the question, which was like, how can we help an individual do a stress test without a doctor being present? And we knew that it was the recoil that the doctor is looking at that's the most important part. So that, like, bounce of the muscle. And so you do that, like you said, it's a gesture where you whip the phone three times, and we're measuring the bounce of the hand in the whip to identify stress.
And do you have some data on how effective this is? Or is there even a way to do that? Like, to, you know, is it true, so to speak? But I guess it's hard to know what, you know, that's a personal response, whether they think it's accurate or not.
Well, yeah. So we did several studies. We've done actually a lot of studies. But one of the ground truths that we used was true versus false statements. So deceit. Oxford University points to the verity of the word spoken as the true gold standard for stress. So meaning statements like "I am alive" versus "I am dead," "My name is Mike" versus "My name is Kate." So statements that are very evident to be true or false. And we can detect a true from a false statement to 68% accuracy, using smartphone sensors. And then we did additional studies on detecting, stressful imagery versus non-stressful imagery, stressful sound versus non-stressful sound. And then we did a randomized control study with a doctor from Oxford University, which was similar to the deceit study, but used, the computer and some imagery. And, you know, we eventually got the signal accuracy up to 79% accuracy. And what's really interesting is that what we've learned about it is that the actual accuracy for detecting stress now is, we have super users in the 90 percentile. And it's bimodal. So we have, like, some users that it's incredibly accurate for, and then we have some users who are, like, at the 50% range. And a lot of it stems to what you were hitting at earlier, which is like helping a person to learn how to open and learn to be curious, which I think are just like such powerful things that we forget about as we become adults. Because we're calling it the I am state. They have to be in like the I am state to use the technology.
Well, let's talk about that. So what are the ways that someone, because this could probably be useful for a lot of applications. What ways have you found through the studies that someone is more open, someone is more I am, someone is more receptive? How do they do that?
Yeah. So in the app right now, there's something called mind-body skills, and we're gathering more data so we can provide feedback around it, but you can still experience it. And inside mind-body skills are three categories that speak to exactly what you just said. And it's explore your physical energy, explore your emotional energy, and then explore your subtle energy. And so in each one of those categories, it walks you through a step, an actual action you can take to explore how to become open. So for example, in physical energy, the first thing it asks you to do is to feel weak. And it was super intentional, because for someone to feel weak, especially a man, you have to be vulnerable. Like the first step to allowing yourself to feel weak is just to be vulnerable, right? And what we know about vulnerability is that there's deep states of love behind vulnerability, right? So actually going into the practice of feeling weak, which not very many people probably do, right? It's a strange thing to think about feeling weak. You actually begin the process of becoming vulnerable, which can lead to helping you become curious, right? Of like, oh, why do I even want to feel vulnerable? You know, why do I even want to feel weak? But then doing the gesture so you can have the felt experience of vulnerability and weakness. And then right from weakness, we go to strong, so you can feel strong. And then in exploring your emotional energy, we have sadness and joy. So allowing a person to feel sadness, which there's so many benefits to feeling sadness, right? I mean, like sadness is healing medicine, or at least crying can be, I should say. And so it walks them through that. And then in subtle energy, it's feeling a true versus a false statement. So to feel, you can actually start to feel the difference, a very subtle difference when you make a true and a false statement in your hand as you're doing the gesture. And you really need to sort of quiet the mind and slow down to be in that felt experience. So that's how we're trying to engineer it, you know. There's some additional things where, you know, we're going to build into it where we just ask them to take a couple of deep breaths. You know, place their hand on their heart, some things before getting to the gesture, like place your hand on your heart, connect to your heart. There's so much powerful energy that comes from the heart. So hoping to reconnect them there and just help them become more curious about the body. I don't know if that answers the question, but that's sort of how we're thinking about it.
Right. But you find that if you have them go through that protocol, essentially the results can be more accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like a range, because what happens is actually there's a step before that I skipped right over, which is the gesture in itself actually helps. Because something we were completely unaware of when we first started this was how disembodied we all are. And I mean, like myself included. And we've worked with like tons of yogis on this too, who I thought were going to be super embodied. But we're super disembodied as a society. And the way we're measuring that is that when people do the gesture for the first time, it was like 90% of people would do like four or five whips and thought they did three.
What is the gesture? Just describe that.
It's if you have your phone in your hand, you have to whip three times. You do three whips while thinking about a topic that has been prompted to you. So there is some like
sort of like a shake, like you're shooting some salt out of a shaker.
Yeah, yeah. So I've heard fly fishing, or like, you know, I've heard or whipping. But
does it matter if you use your dominant hand?
We need to do research on that. We haven't done non-dominant hand research yet, but that's definitely something I'm curious about.
Okay.
We haven't researched.
Okay, and so what kind of questions or answers, or how can this be used with the app itself? Like, how does this actually become a practical tool?
Yeah, so I, in my mind, the vision is like emotional healing on a conveyor belt. Like anytime you feel like something's off, or you're like, you know, whatever the feeling is, a feeling you don't like, you can check in, identify what it is, and then our future product will have lots of healing modalities in it. So you can pick the healing modality that works for you and have that experience with the device you already have, right? And more people own smartphones than health insurance, I think, in our country. So you know, if we can get healing into a smartphone, you know, how can that help? How can that help? You know, is my question. So that's the longer term vision. The current app has a has a stress meter in it, but it's basically like 8-9 questions where you can identify where stress might be coming from in your life that you might not be aware of. And we've heard a couple of really interesting things about how people are using it that I think is super cool. One, there's this girl, she's getting her PhD right now and she's super stressed out and she hasn't been able to sleep. And what she said she does with it, she uses it like a game. So when she identifies a source of stress, she'll sit there with whatever the topic is and do a bunch of deep diaphragmatic breath work or any other exercise that she might be practicing with, some sort of mindfulness technique. And then she'll check back in to see if the topic has changed. So she's shifting her relationship to this topic that might be affecting her adversely. And then she's able to sleep, which is amazing. I'm like, I was super excited when I heard that one because sleep is so important.
Yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't the app have like a series of like stock questions that you have that you plug into one of those in a sense?
Yeah, exactly. So we designed, that's actually what you just hit on is really important. And I probably should touch on that all the way back with the muscle testing part. What we learned in the process of developing the technology is that like one of the most important parts of muscle testing with our technology or without is how you phrase the questions. What we know about muscle testing is that predicting the future, it's not really great at that. Like it doesn't necessarily know the future. So you need to orient the question to an outcome you're looking to understand. So we did that with all those questions that you asked about. So if you, when you log in, you can see the questions are all basically designed in a very specific way to help you understand. So for example, for work life, the statement is, I'm satisfied with my current work life. So we're asking the question and we designed that question very specifically because that's the ideal, right? We should be satisfied with our current work life. And if we're not, there'll be stress associated with that. We'll pick up on it and hopefully that'll help you gain a deeper insight to what's going on that needs to be changed.
So what are the questions that are built into it right now?
So what we did to help make this, you know, clinically accepted is we took something called the Perceived Stress Scale, which is a clinically validated stress scale, and then fitted the questions they have in that to our technology. So it's topics like work, finances, your well-being, self-esteem, intimacy, joy, family, flow, and autonomy. And then at the very top, there's just one general question called, it's how do you feel? Which is just checking in to see if there's stress presence. And if that, the point of that first question is if stress is present, now you can go through those other 9 to identify where it's coming from. And then once it identifies where stress is coming from, it gives you some solutions to help immediately change your relationship to that topic so you can have sort of more ease and access to a better solutions, you know, and live more comfortably.
But what if you want to use it to try to make a decision? And I realize that's somewhat in the future, but you're kind of checking in now. You're kind of saying like, for instance, is it in my best interest to go to this event or to take this job or, you know, that kind of thing? Is that something you could do and it would help, you know, sort of getting your body knowledge from that as opposed to your totally. Mind decision?
Yeah, totally. And I'm happy. I'm like super open about this. I think this is, I think that muscle testing, I'll answer your question and I'm going to go to the next point. Sorry. So yes, in the question that you just said, instead of saying, I think you said, is it, you actually want to declare. Mm-hmm. So you declare it's in my best interest to take this job.
So it's not a question. It's more of a declaration. And you're seeing if your body's like, yes, I agree with that or no, I don't.
Yeah, exactly. There's it's all statements, not questions. But it's kind of weird to tell someone to make a statement. So we say you can ask questions. I mean, it just seems to make more sense logically, but you have to make statements.
Okay.
The premise of our technology is that lie detection technology, polygraph technology, was one of the biggest breakthroughs for the field of human psychology, but we applied it to extract information from people instead of supporting people. And it was really because of the zeitgeist of the time that the technology was born. It was born during like World War I. And now that we're in this period of time where there's so much suffering, people want to know what's going on. And we know that criminals can evade a polygraph, but when someone's suffering, they don't want to evade, right? Like, I would imagine most people want to understand what's going on. And so that's really the premise is like when you're making statements, there's a response from the body and there's so much good research to show this already, right? Like we know from all the polygraph research that like if you make a false statement, the body responds.
Well, is a polygraph partially measuring muscle response, muscle testing?
It measures a handful of things. So it measures heart rate variability, galvanic skin response, I believe pulse. I believe it's those three. But that's part of the research we're doing with a couple of labs. Our hypothesis is that muscle testing is actually leading to a spike in those. So your muscle fiber is like, if you look at the body as internet, your muscle fiber is like broadband connectivity for the brain. Like, and I can actually share a little bit about this. This is super interesting. So like,
sure.
An example of this, I think it's really interesting, is all of us have that experience where we don't listen to our gut feelings. And we're like, God, why didn't I listen to that gut feeling? Like, I saw it. One of the reasons is that gut feelings use the hormonal system to rise into awareness. And the gut feelings are like a 56K hookup to the brain. So they're slow. And consciousness is also a little bit slow. So really you're seeing your gut feelings in hindsight, thinking that you saw them in the moment. Whereas muscle fiber is, you know, direct access. There's a lot going on in muscle fiber too that we can talk about. But going back to what we were talking about with the pulse and galvanic skin response and lie detectors, we're doing research to benchmark against those, because our sort of hypothesis and question we're asking is like, wow, does this muscle response actually lead to an increase in HRV, in blood pressure, in pulse? Like, is it preceding them? And if so, yeah.
Well, maybe, you know, just from an evolutionary standpoint, going back to our animalistic bodies before we had higher realms of frontal cortex, brain function and stuff. I don't know. It's like maybe that's more established in a sense in our DNA and our evolution, that on the base level of just like our muscle response, almost like a plant response.
Yeah.
You know, when it moves from sunlight and stuff, it's like that's one of the oldest things we have in our body.
You just nailed it. So in muscle fiber, there's something called muscle spindles. So your muscles, and specifically muscle spindles and the Golgi tendons, are actually sensory organs. So when you walk into a room and you're like, whoa, I feel the energy of that room, it feels off, like that is real. It's proprioception. Well, proprioception is how we orient ourselves in space and time. But, you know, intuition is a function, seems to be a function in that. And so to your point, that gamma loop, which is linked into the cerebellum, and the cerebellum is what regulates muscular movement, you're sensing things, and it's been there. The cerebellum is like the oldest part of the brain. Can we riff on that for a second? Because I think that's super interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So the cerebellum, that's like, I'm so excited about this because it's all sort of new research that's come about during the period of time we've been doing work on Sensi, that's coming out of like Stanford, Harvard, some of the best labs. Basically, the cerebellum, we've always thought it as part of the reptilian brain, and we thought that 90% of its function was for our fine muscular movement. So regulating movement, right? So if you're like doing yoga and you do like tree pose and you look down at your foot would be wobbling at a really fast rate that you consciously can't control. That's the cerebellum, basically regulating, helping to stabilize you.
Okay.
What's really interesting that they're finding, there's a ton of good research, I've got links to all of it, that basically the cerebellum has evolved with us. And what we're learning about the cerebellum is actually 80% of its function is an editor or an auditor for all of the other parts of the brain. So all of the higher thought, all of the things that are, that are newer, the cerebellum is actually the editor and auditor for them, to make sure that they are like coming through and into your life in a way that's in cohesion with how you want to be represented. A funny example of that would be like someone who gets drunk. What they're doing is they're putting the cerebellum to sleep, so the editor's offline, so they're saying do crazy things, right? That are, you know, whatever, embarrassing. Which, yeah, okay. you can know what I mean. But so to your point, like this whole thing, this with between the cerebellum and the muscle fibers and the Golgi tendons, is at play with our human psychology. There's a lot there, but I'm like super stoked on that.
Yeah. So this is a quick side question. If it's only 60%, 70%, 80% accurate, is it something you could just repeat and then get an aggregate score? Or it's more like, well, but you haven't really set the stage in your body. It would consistently be inaccurate if you haven't done certain things, or you're just like hypnosis. If you don't want to be hypnotized, you won't be hypnotized.
Right. So if you repeat it, and you don't want it to repeat.
Could you do it like, 12 times as opposed to just doing it once and say, oh, most of them were yeses. So it gives me a better sense of the result.
Yeah. I think, so what Sensei's doing is it's amplifying you, right? So it's not a magic, black box. So like to that point, if you do it, let's say 12 times, and for the first five, you're doing it true and open. And the sixth one, all of a sudden by doing it so many times, you've shifted it and it's changed, then Sensei's going to change. Right. right. So it's like,
yeah.
So it's the funny thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so let me ask you, like, it sounds like you're still doing some research and you're kind of, you said like you put some questions in there that would be quote unquote accepted by more of a medical establishment, scientific establishment. And I'm assuming there's a methodology behind that. So this was, because I've always thought of muscle testing in a sense as sort of a fringe idea. And I'm hearing you say that, well, it didn't start out that way. And maybe, I'm not sure how it got that way. Maybe because some people were pushing the capability of the technology, so to speak, they were just getting kind of out there. Yeah, like maybe trying to predict the future or things that can't be qualified and quantified. And so therefore science is like, well, now it's not science anymore because there's no way for us to prove if that's true. And it sounds like you're trying to ride a line to make something accurate, but also scientific. But I also sense you're planning to go somewhere else with it in the future.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's right. I mean, we've done research. So alongside what we have in the product currently, we've also done research with some healers, and this Dr. Ann Jensen out of Oxford University did her whole PhD at Oxford on muscle testing, which is super rad. And she's our scientific advisor now, and she also has developed these healing protocols that uses muscle testing to identify the emotional cause of a stressor. So for example, in Sensei right now, if you identify that work is stressful, like you might've already known that, but what's more interesting is then being able to identify the actual emotional cause of that stress, right? Is it anger? Is it fear? Is it sadness?
And how do you do that with the app? So if it's like has these base questions?
Yeah. So you declare it. So you make the declaration. So, so you go through stress meter that's in there already and you identify it's, you know, work or finances. And then now that you've identified that, you'd be prompted, do you want to help shifting this? And you could pick the protocol you want. So let's say you pick Dr. Jensen's, we'll call it a program. And Dr. Jensen's program is called Heart Speak. And the way it works is that you then make the statement. So the cause of stress is fear. If Sensei doesn't see stress, it then loads the next question. So then it prompts you to say the cause of stress is anger. So you say the cause of stress is anger. You do the gesture. It sees stress detected for anger. It then plays an intervention in the app. Dr. Jensen's program uses posture to actually elicit and bring forward the stressful emotion. So you evoke it and burn it off. And then it uses a principle in neuroscience called memory reconsolidation to actually alter the memory of, you know, say work, if that's a topic you're working on, from anger to joy by then sitting up and using the posture of joy. So smiling and rolling your shoulders back. Her technique's awesome. It's had a big impact on me.
I mean, is there a way that it could be developed in the future where you can sort of input your own questions or statements, I should say?
Yeah, I should say that before I went to the healing ones, but that's going to be a part of the next build, which is we're going to have a module in there called Explore on Your Own. Something that you might be totally interested in that I was just jamming with a friend earlier today on is sound. So I've got a friend who is a sound healer. She uses sound bowls and hand pans and all kinds of really cool music. And she's been using it to help her clients identify which sound bowls. She's got like tons of Tibetan sound bowls and crystal sound bowls. And so she uses the technology to help identify which sound is best for the different clients she works with to help optimize their experience and sound journey.
So what would be the statement that she does to test?
Yeah. So we talked about a protocol and so first there has to be sort of like an onboarding for each client. And so the onboarding would be they sit and they play each sound bowl. So the client's exposed to each sound. So let's just say there's like five, it's sound bowl A, B, C, D, E, or was that five? Yeah. And she would say, you know, this
is like a Pepsi challenge. It's a blind taste test.
Yeah.
You don't know what Sambal it is.
Right. Right. Exactly.
The hippie Pepsi Coke.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Basically the hippie Pepsi Coke. And then after they've been exposed to the Sambal, they would then do the muscle test. Sambal A is optimal for my well-being, or whatever they're looking to optimize for. The statement, if it's not well-being, it could be for my bliss, for my release, for whatever the goal is that the client's looking for. You'd orient the question to that goal. So Sambal, you know, the Sambal A is optimal for my well-being, and they do the gesture. If they're stressed, don't use that Sambal.
Mm-hmm. And they can throw it out. Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah.
Well, for that client, hold it for the next one, because what's good for one person might not be good for another, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this seems really promising. Why isn't it more mainstream?
I don't know. That's a question I keep asking. I think
it's because there's a vagary to it, in a sense. You know, it's like people want a black or a white. Even though it kind of is that, but
could be. I've got so many questions, man. I've got so many unanswered questions, and especially around, it's all around the body. There's such a rejection of the body. I don't understand it. And I have way more questions than I have answers when it comes to this one.
Well, we're so in our heads the past since like Newton, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of Descartes kind of thing. I mean, that's the paradigm we're in. That's the religion we're in, is of the mind.
And why do you think that stuck so hard? Because there's been some really good people who've come that have tried to point us to the body.
I would say because when that shift started to happen, Newton was hit on the head. You know, there's an irony to that.
Totally.
With an apple, supposedly. Well, all this, I think it ushered forth such advances that they thought, oh, you know, this is where the power is at. And it was all new. And then you just start fast forwarding that to like the Industrial Revolution and this idea of dominance over nature, you know, fast forwarding that to the information age and to where we are now. And there definitely is the belief and paradigm that we'll invent and think our way through anything. Because I was talking to Eric Davis yesterday. He's a sort of he's an author, thinker's talk. He was at the conference.
Yeah.
And, we're talking about technology, and I'm going to bastardize the way he said it, but sort of like technology has taken the burden of our hopes for like this utopian future, because it's sort of like the obvious way that we do it in a way, you know, and it sort of is always increasing. And so it takes the weight of, I'm not really saying what he said correctly. I have to go back and listen to it. But I think it's sort of like something we lean on really heavily. Yeah. And so, over, you know, after a couple hundred years, 400 years, we've kind of lost our way.
Totally.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Like we got consumed by it.
Yeah. And so we lost the memory and the tools of the body. Right. In a somatic sense of, I mean, God knows our bodies are usually, and for a lot of folks, screaming at us in different ways. And what do we do? Even Western medicine just tries to stop it or put a Band-Aid, like cover it up.
Yeah.
As opposed, as you said, the Eastern Chinese approach of what's the cause, or where's the imbalance?
Right. Right.
So maybe that's something to do with it there.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've just seen in developing this, you know, it's we're almost 4 years now. And like in that process, just the amount of like rejection that I've been exposed to. I mean, I could write a book about the number of times, which has been good. I mean, I probably needed some humbling, but some of it just didn't make sense. A lot of it didn't make sense. I couldn't.
It's probably a re-education type thing, because for a lot of people, I think, they either don't know what it is, or they think they do, and they have a pejorative mindset about it because they see it as pseudoscience.
Yeah. 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 100%. And I feel like, I also wonder inside of what you just said too. So that's definitely a part. And then also I'm really wondering too, how much emotional trauma is creating this like collective fear around the body. Because we've been so, I think about like, some bigger themes around it with like the Industrial Revolution and like emotions during this time, you know, that they're not, emotions aren't very profitable, right? And so they're looking for mass efficiency. So they just were shoving people into a desk and in this way, sort of cutting mm-hmm. them off from their bodies by just having them stare at a computer or whatever it was they were doing. And now we're dealing with sort of the baggage from this like massive desire to optimize and go for efficiency has left us with this emotional baggage where we've rejected the body and we've rejected our feelings. And then we have like lots of trauma. And so, in that, you know, where there's people are starting to awaken and they want to look at it, but there's also still this like layer that we're trying to cut through, to come back to the body. And my, you know, I really feel like our mutual friend, Ian Finn, says it, right? So how we treat our bodies, how we treat ourselves is a reflection of how we treat our communities, and how we treat our communities is a reflection of how we treat our earth and our environment. So if we're all in rejection, you know, collectively of the body and treating ourselves well, you know, all these other problems are sort of stemming from that, potentially. I just thought I'd philosophize for a minute there. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's the more we're in our minds, I think the more separate we feel, and probably the more we're in our bodies, the more connected we feel to our environment. And at the end of the day, we are the environment. And yeah, again, it goes back to this I think therefore I am sort of, I don't know, Cartesian thought. And that is the religion, that is the dogma that we're in. And so we're climbing uphill in order to convince ourselves and others that there's more to the picture, or that what you feel and your intuition and your body knowledge and this sort of thing has value.
Yeah.
It's scary for people too, because, you know, from a medical standpoint, there's this mountain of evidence for traditional Western medicine, the kind of statistics about how well it works and all this kind of stuff.
Hey, buddy, you there? I think I lost you.
Oh, you back?
Yeah, there you go. Sorry about that. From a medical standpoint, okay, is where I lost you.
I don't know
you.
What that was. I was saying there's a mountain of evidence statistically with Western medicine about like what works. Well, you're grayed out.
Test.
Waiting for you to come back here.
Hey, can you hear me?
Might be an internet thing on your end. Oh, you're
hey.
Back?
Oh, yeah, I'm back. I'm on full. I don't know what happened there. Sorry.
It might be internet slow or something standpoint. On your end.
Oh, no.
Okay. Hey. How's the internet over
it's
there?
Better. I'm switching. I switched rooms. I'm closer to the internet. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. I think when it just grays out like that, it's just a dropout, but hopefully it's going to work out.
Yeah, here. I think I lost you at medical community.
Yeah. The Western medical world has such numbers and data, and it's so precise that it can be scary for people to trust outside of something that maybe has less research and data too. Because they're like, oh, I take this pill, I have a 62% chance of success, you know, and there's 10,000 subjects who have taken it, or 100,000. Whereas they're like, but there's this other side of the picture with Chinese medicine, for instance, where they're like, well, it's been around for thousands of years, but we don't have the studies to tell you. And some people get freaked out. They're like, I need to know like exactly how this is going to work and stuff like that. And it's hard for them to trust other aspects like body knowledge, you know, or working with the body. I think that's a skill you have to learn, because if we don't have a way to measure it, like this app is a way of measuring it in a sense, but if you don't have that, you're really just working with you and your body, and there's an intelligence there that you have to learn.
Yeah, totally. That's really powerful what you just said. And I feel like that's a huge part of it, right? And like faith, we know that faith is a healing power. And there is a lot of fear around that. I haven't thought about that way, the way you just described it, but that's a good one. And we're hoping, that's our hope is, you know, I think to pay it, you know, to be honest or fair on both sides of it, you know, that faith also has been sort of used in, not malicious, but in ways that may have gone too far in one direction. You know, made some claims that have been made that are crazy, you know?
Sure. And that happens obviously in the New Age wellness movement all the time. Oh. So it's like you're kind of towing a line here in different worlds. And I think I'm sensing that's like, you know, one side wants it to be on one side of the spectrum and the other one is like, oh, and we can do this and this and this. And you're like, well, hold on.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't just throw things around. Like, let's be accurate and let's try to make something that's grounded in some, you know, some results for people.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's figure out what the body can and can't do. I mean, it's amazing. Some of the things that we're starting to learn about it. Let's really understand it better. One thing I wanted to touch on, you were sharing on earlier that I think is super helpful to bring into the picture when you're talking about Descartes and some of the baggage we're dragging with us. There was a guy, he was like one of Einstein's good friends. His name was Dr. Manfred Kleins. And he created some really fascinating technologies like the ultrasound. And he helped build some really interesting technologies to help computers interpret sound. I think you really dig him given your work. But he did this work. It was called Centic Cycles. Centics were the science of sensing emotions. And I'll just do one of his exercises right now. It's really interesting. So if you put the palm of your hand out, so just take your left hand and extend it flat, and then use your right index finger and start to just rub the palm of your hand with your right index finger.
I can barely reach it.
Yep. Perfect. You made contact, yeah?
I have all these broken bones in this arm. Well, not anymore, but all the scar tissue. But I'm doing
it. Oh, no, I didn't know that. Sorry, man. If this puts you in a bad position, don't do it.
This is good therapy.
Okay, all right.
Stretching the finger.
Yeah, I don't want to hurt you in any way. Sorry.
No pain.
Cool. All right, well, see, just sort of rubbing the palm with your index finger. And, and as you're rubbing the palm, start to express love. So just rub the palm and then start to express what love is as you're rubbing your palm. And go ahead and do that for a second. And then as you're rubbing the palm, we're going to switch now and start to express anger. So as you're rubbing your palm, just rub the palm and the whatever anger might feel like for you. And so we don't leave you in anger, we'll come back to love. So you express love again, rub the palm with love. Okay, and then we'll stop that. And so first off, how was that experience before I say anything? Were you able to express love and anger? Did you have a felt experience?
Of course, yes. You're very clear.
Yeah. So what Manfred Kleins says, which I find so fascinating, is that emotions are actual time forms that are in our nervous system. They're like DNA that's coded into the nervous system, the central nervous system. And so if they weren't already in you, I would have had to tell you how to express. No one had to tell you how to do that. You just were automatically able to express them.
Right.
Well, that's a very different approach to emotions than what's currently happening, and a different approach to the nervous system. And it goes back all the way back to Plato's theory of form, to Plato and Aristotle. If you're familiar with their theories of form, but
not really.
So I'm not an expert on these two, but from what I remember, Plato's theory of form basically was that you can't detach. So like you can't detach the form. So I'm sorry. Let me get. Yeah. Plato's theory of form was that these forms in our life are what we see in our life are not actually the actual form. They are shadows of the form. And the truest form is thought. So in the realm of thought or ideas, that is real form. And all these other things are shadows of the thought. And then, so therefore the shadows can't be divorced from the thought or the actual true form itself. Whereas Aristotle said they can be. And Aristotle's theory of form is what gave birth to duality and dualism and materialism in the world that we know. Whereas Plato's original theory of form was that they're one and the same. And it's this sort of universal idea of oneness and unity. And that ties into sort of Manfred Kleins work on the idea that these emotions are a central part of our nervous system. They're not happening to you. They are you. They're in you. And they can be expressed and released at any time you need to by this simple little hand gesture you just did.
Wow.
It's a little heavy, but
But it's interesting. It's essentially like the muscle testing is just that. It's a test to give you information. And then how you work with that stuff, you could use any number of methodologies to, you know, try to help that or help, you know, work through the thing you want to work through. I mean, I guess you could use it on one level just to learn like what's best for you in a sense, or what's not very good. And then the next level is like helping to root that out and work with the cause or the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. And like tying it back to muscle testing and what you just said, like you know what's going on, and muscle testing is a way to connect back to your truth. And that's, I think the most beautiful thing about muscle testing is like so much of suffering comes from this external seeking. And what muscle testing is showing is like you reclaim your truth, you know. And the crazy thing about that truth is like we did research on it, and yes, your body responds to true and false statements. And yes, your body also responds in a similar way to stressful and non-stressful emotions. There's like this similar response that's happening in the muscle fiber. And wow. So your feelings are your truth in a way, right? And mm-hmm. I think it's poetic mm-hmm. and nice.
In some ways, they don't lie, or they're at least they're coming from a root truth.
Right. And the thing about what you just said there is that when I honor my truth, it's my truth. It's not necessarily yours. So how I feel is my truth. And maybe you feel differently. But when I start to respect the way that I feel, maybe from that place, I can respect you and the fact that you can feel differently than me. And that's okay. Right. And we can all have that sort of place of acceptance for one another through the idea that, you know, people feel differently, and that's okay. And just because you feel a certain way doesn't mean anything about me, right?
Well, maybe this can solve the Israeli-Palestine thing. It's like, guys, you just feel different.
Exactly. Okay. Just whip your phone, guys. Peace in the Middle
Quit
East.
Quit killing each other. Peace. Yeah.
Peace in the Middle East.
Well, this stuff is really cool, man. Right. I mean, so how can people give this a shot and dive in and check out more about what you're doing?
Yeah, SensiApp.com. So www.sensi, S-E-N-S-I-E. app.com. You can download it there.
And it's also you can search it inside like the Apple App Store or Google Android Play Store, right?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, both of them. You just pop in Sensi. Android Play where we just released on, and so when you search for Sensi, mm-hmm. S-E-N-S-I-E, it autocorrects. So make sure you tap on the fine print and make sure you tell them you want S-E-N-S-I-E. It autocorrects to S-E-N-S-I, I think. So
cool.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I had some basic questions you answered, and I look forward to now digging into it a little deeper and the subject. And yeah, it's really neat. So I appreciate you bringing this into my life, and I think other people will be into that too.
Stoked, man. Thanks for the opportunity to connect. Good to link and share on it.
Okay. Well, there it is. Go get your muscle testing on. Check out the Sensi app. It's pretty interesting. Once you really know sort of what's going on with it, it can be a really useful tool. So thank you, Mike, so much for digging into that. This track that you are hearing in the background, it's called We Are Truth, and it is from the Ram Dass record. That's me singing in the background. Someone asked me when they heard this song, they were like, I got a question. Who is that lady singing on that song? Like, that's me. Like, I can't understand what she's saying. Is that intentional? Yeah. It's sort of, kind of. It's like a vibe thing. That's We Are Truth. Ram Dass coming out August 9th, Friday. And lots of events. Please say hello. Please give this podcast a review. Do your thing. Do your walk. Keep walking that walk. When you take shit, and you probably will, do it with grace, folks. Do it with grace.
All comes from the One, from the God, and we are spiritual beings visiting humanity. We are all truth. Souls.